My name is Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
I'd like to thank you for having me. I'd like to thank the other two guys for not showing up. Now I'm nervous because I'm going to get asked questions later. I wasn't until I got up here. I'm glad to be. I want to thank you again. So when I say I'm an alcoholic, it's not because I ruined a marriage or I wrecked the car or I, you know, had a bad time at a wedding or I got a DWI. I tell you I'm an alcoholic because it became apparent to me and everyone around me that alcohol is just more important to me than anything else. And that, you know, in my case, from as long ago as I could remember, alcohol just made me feel better. And so I'm an alcoholic not because all of those things happened, because when I drank, I had no control over what I drank. And I always thought that it would be different the next time. So as early as I can remember, when I was a youngster, my grandmother's house on a Sunday afternoon, the boys are in the back learning how to gamble, and the girls are in the playing dress up with my cousin Robert. typical Italian family. I'm in the kitchen with a bunch of old men that didn't speak English, but they had my grandfather's wine. And I could get some of that, in a jelly glass with some lemon up, they used to call it. Cheap 7-Up. And it made me feel better. Now, it's hard to quantify feel better when you're a kid, but it just made everything just a little bit more okay. And so when I got older, and as I got older, I knew that alcohol just made me comfortable. Made life easier for me. Now, I don't know if you identify with this, but for me, my experience was life just wasn't easy for me. You know, when I got here there was much talk about why I was an alcoholic. And if you got sober in the 80s, you probably remember Bradshaw and, you know, the child within. And I was like, yeah, that's me. You know, I was the only Italian kid in an Irish neighborhood. You know, that's why. And they all had brothers and I had sisters. That's why I was an alcoholic. And their fathers worked for the city. And my father was in the garment industry. No. You had to have reasons when I got here, being an alcoholic. And in my case, it made me feel better. And so every time, every opportunity I had as I got older, every time I was out of sight, you know, I would drink because it just made it easier for me. And so when I was supposed to be going to high school, you know, my parents, I got to tell you, I'd love to tell you that I had problems at home and, you know, dinner was a contact sport and it was terrible to live in my house. You know, it wasn't like that for me. I had a great home. I had two hardworking parents. They gave me, immigrant parents, they gave me every benefit, you know, a child could have. And indeed, had great hopes for their only Italian son. So, when I got thrown out of my first school, their hopes were downgraded from physician to attorney. And then I was asked to leave my second school, and their hopes were downgraded from attorney to please just don't get a felony conviction. You'll get a good city job. And interestingly enough, the last school I wasn't even asked to leave. The school got an order of protection. I wasn't allowed within. Now, I'm telling you this because, you know, I wasn't a bad kid. Just in time for the good part. Don't worry about it. I wasn't a bad kid, but when I drank, everything became a good idea. You know, I don't know if you identify with that, but, you know, I never wanted it to end. And the truth of the matter, you know, what goes behind that is, no matter what was going on, I just knew that it was better over there. No matter what we were doing, I knew that I could fix it. No matter how good a time we were having, I knew it could be better. And so, indeed, when there was absolutely no problems in my life, and everything was like, okay, I could drink and make it more okay. And inevitably, there were consequences behind that behavior. 3 schools later, I don't got to tell you the rest of the story. You know, when everybody else was eating Cheerios, I was drinking Tango and Bally High. I wanted to go to first period in a good mood. But I never got to first period. Yeah, we know that. Talking about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and I was like, yeah, they can make 6 of those movies. Like, I got, it was like a half a dozen of those days in my life. Why? Because alcohol made it easy for me. And in fact, when I would be, you know, removed from it for some period of time, for whatever reason, even as an adolescent and a teenager, I would start to hyperventilate. You know, I didn't know what that was back then. So, you know, the first time I went to the emergency room, and they said, yeah, just give him a paper bag. So I get the paper bag. And then the second time was like, just give him the paper bag. And then I started realizing that when my mother was pissed off at me, she'd give me a really big bag. But that didn't happen when I drank. You know, in fact, I remember being newly sober early on and having this thing happen to me, and my sponsor says to me, that's an anxiety attack. That happens to girls. Boys don't have anxiety attacks. Well, when you removed me from alcohol, the world got hard for me again. So, you know, I started doing the things that you do to make money when you don't have a high school or college education. And I was fairly successful at it. And those things come with some dangerous situations and dangerous friends. And that was all okay. Now, I got to tell you, you know, I mentioned I come from a good home, and I had a real strong sense of right and wrong. Alcohol made all of it easier for me. The lines, to move them. They weren't even blurry. It just went from here to here. And I could make that happen with alcohol. You ask me in the light of day today, and I think about some of those things and some of those situations. God, another lifetime. And there was alcohol involved, and it was easy for me. I don't need to tell you, you know, a whole lot about the rest of it, except to say that as time went on, the situations became more dangerous. You know, and my alcohol, you know, my alcohol increased. And so, you know, I was saying earlier about how I wasn't an alcoholic because, you know, I spilled a drink at a wedding. Alcohol dictated all of my behaviors, where I went, who I was with, how long I was going to be with them, you know, where I was going to go next. Indeed, you know, when there was, you know, when I got, so where I come from, bars close at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got tired of not having anywhere to go at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I started opening after hours, playing some gambling joints, so that we could keep it going. You know, and at that time it was all good. You know, there wasn't any really serious consequences yet. And, you know, you start to believe that, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, it's going to be okay. You know, I got a pocket full of cash. I'm rocking, I'm rolling. I'm starting to pay some prices for my behaviors. There are some trips to emergency rooms. There are some arrests. Nothing serious. But, you know, and the people I'm running with, a little bit more shady, and, you know, all of that's okay. And I, you got to forgive me, I'm having a little bit of trouble talking, allergies. My voice is a little bit higher pitched tonight than usual. you know, it was all okay. And I was believing that press, and I was believing that it was going to be okay, and I was the guy. You know, I was starting to really believe the myth that alcohol had created in my life. And it was one night back in 78, and I was out with 3 of my buddies. They were all brothers, and we were out on the scooters. And the long and the short of it, I left them in a bar. I was going to do something and come back. And in that short space in time, I took a nose off a Toyota on a motorcycle. As they laid on the side of the road, I'd been dismembered. The hit was so hard that my cousin come from a block away, got him out of bed, didn't know it was me, just heard the impact. He came running, begged somebody for a belt so I could tie my leg off because I knew I was bleeding to death. So, you know, I end up in a hospital, intensive care for a very long time. I was in intensive care for so long that they felt sorry for me because all my friends were coming up, they couldn't see me. Put me in a room outside intensive care. Party started. My friends were like me. And, you know, I'd love to tell you at that point in time that I, you know, like, this is it now. This is a life-threatening situation. Enough with the alcohol. The only difference between me and driving a car was he was my own. Bullocks don't think that. So, needless to say, I was my visiting privileges in the hospital when they found a pint under my pillow. I'm not here to say anything bad about drugs, but I will tell you that Demerol works better with alcohol. Just thought I'd share that. You know, so there was a long recuperation attached to that. And I was in wheelchairs for a long time, and I was on crutches for a long time, but I got to tell you, you know, and I came out of the hospital with a monster habit, but it wasn't good enough, because I couldn't drink when I was in the hospital, and what I needed to do was I needed to drink, because alcohol made the rest of the world okay for me. You know, it made it in here bearable, and that's just the way it was for me. And when I was able to, you know, and I got strong enough and I was able to get out and start doing things again, I went back to what I knew. Except that this time, the situations were a little scarier, more dangerous, and okay. And I'd love to tell you that, you know, sparing you the details, all of that stuff, so when I say stuff, I'm talking about incarcerations and violence and all of that stuff, wasn't enough to make me say, maybe we need some new life choices. Because if you're like me, you don't think that way. Just think that it's going to be different. And it was never different. My alcohol use just got worse. But the situations got worse. More alcohol to make it okay. Long about that time, I found out that I was getting married. And, you know, not so crazy about the wife, but absolutely insane about the daughter I was going to have. Couldn't wait for her. And I got nothing bad about my ex-wife. She's a great girl. I was just talking to her on the phone. That's a story we'll get into later. But you know, and so by this time, alcohol had pretty much taken me over. And the truth of the matter is, I begged her not to marry me. I knew I was out of my mind. You know? But we do the right thing. And I did. You know, and it was a few months after my daughter was born, this little girl that I wanted more than anything in the whole world. I got to tell you something, more than life itself, some situations that occurred behind my use, and I had to leave. And I was able to walk out of that baby's life like that. Just without looking back. I stand here today and I cringe. You know how I did that. But if you're like me, you know that nothing's more important than me. And I couldn't be there because I didn't want to pay the price for my behavior. So over the next year, I'd seen her a few times in different cities. She didn't know who I was, and I came home, and I wanted her, you know, she was this little baby, you know. And the arrogance of an alcoholic, like, I called her, and I wanted her to come to me, like, I'm daddy, like, you know, she don't know who I am. I'm just this guy that rolled in, you know. And I'm angry with the kid, and I'm angry with the mother. Don't you know I'm your father? Don't you know you should be here? I wasn't there for the last year. I'm angry with them. Insane. Alcohol made that okay. So when I tell you that alcohol was more important to me than anything, I, you know, my father, who was, I got no business with him, he was a good man. You know, I had no bad deals with my own man. And indeed, when, along about that time, he was diagnosed with leukemia, and I couldn't get to see him. See, he lived 50 miles away. And if you're an alcoholic like me, that's far. You gotta plan a trip like that. Don't forget, I'm gonna have my wife and my daughter in the car, so I can't drink all the way down. Then I gotta visit. Then I gotta drive all the way back on alcohol. Long trip. And my pops is a good guy. He was a prince. He was just a hardworking guy. Just, you know, did everything for everybody and provided for us very well. And, you know, I started to feel guilty about the fact that I couldn't, you know, I wasn't seeing him. And you know, I really wanted to see him, but I just knew what was involved for me to get down there. And it was just beyond, you know, anything that I could put together. And I figured out this way that I could have him and my uncle from Connecticut come in that I was very close to. And, you know, they could stay by me for the weekend. We'd have the weekend together, and it would be very nice. And that's a great plan. And indeed, you know, made the arrangements. And they came in, and they got there on Saturday. My wife comes upstairs, and she says, you know, your uncle's downstairs. All right, you know, in a while. Father got there shortly thereafter. She says, Father's downstairs. I said, all right. She's upstairs an hour later. Looked at me, and she knew, because I wasn't done yet. I had started drinking the day before. So, split level house, balconies, upper level, cathedral ceiling, living rooms here. On the wall, on the other side of the wall. I could not put that down. See, my father was on the other side of the wall that I knew was dying. So if I tell you that alcohol was more important to me than anything else in my life, I'm here to tell you it was way bigger than a detail. In fact, there wasn't anything meaningful in my life that had not been destroyed by my alcohol. I didn't know why. I know I'd kicked a bunch of drug habits when I was a kid. And the truth of the matter is, I was trying for, you know, a long period of time to stop. No, and I did. Again, if you're like me, you're great at stopping, just not so good at staying stopped. And that was my thing. And I had tried for a long time to stop. I did everything I knew how. And I tried for months and months and months to stop. Failed miserably every time. Failed miserably every time. Might get a couple of days, might get 3 days, might get 5 days. Indeed, at one point I got over 14 days. What a guy I am. And take a couple of days off of good behavior. Problem is, I didn't know when those days were going to come and how long it was going to last. So if I knew that I was, like, I could say, oh, just, you know what, I need to loosen up. I'm going to go to the bar tonight, which I never did, but I wasn't. I didn't know how long that trip was going to last, so I would never say something like that, you know. I was wondering, I saw everybody starting to move around. Like, I wondered if there's something like moving around on the floor. I feel much better now. So I did everything I knew how to stop, and I just failed miserably. You know, no matter what I did, no matter how I tried, no matter what I thought of, I had my crew, the guys who were around me, were trying to keep me away. You know, I just failed miserably. My last one wasn't my worst one. You know, my last one was just a couple of days. There was no violence, no arrests. Like, there was nothing really bad that happened. No. What I will tell you, it's just the last morning that I went home, that I absolutely hated myself. Now, if you're like me, you know what that feels like, to stand in front of the mirror, just loathe what you're looking at. Like, hate isn't strong enough a word. You know, after you've failed and failed and failed and failed and swore you were never going to do it again, and failed, you feel weak. You know, there's that line in the basic text, incomprehensible demoralization. Oh, could there be anything more perfect than that? You know, when you just know, when you just know in your soul, you've done it again, and just hate yourself for doing it. So I came home this Sunday morning and said to my wife, I just looked up at her and I says, Annie, I'm sorry, but I can't stop. I can't. Can I know? She called Intergroup, got me to a meeting at Richmond Memorial Hospital on Sunday morning, and that's really when my life began. Like, I gotta tell you where I came from. I'm not real comfortable doing that, but I just love talking about this next part of my life. Because indeed, when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had immediately gotten some hope. I saw some people in the room. Excuse me. I saw some people in the room who were smiling, you know, and they were like talking to each other. Where I come from, I didn't talk to strangers. Sorry. And they seemed to be like enjoying themselves. And I got to tell you, I didn't come here to stay here. You know, I just came here to clean up, you know, hit the streets a little stronger, figure out what I was doing wrong. Like, I had to be a way to do it right, and I wasn't able to figure it out. But you guys had to know, because you's a pros. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And was given a meeting list, was told where to go, and indeed, met my first sponsor a few days later. Trust me, through no choice of my own, he yoked me. And he just grabbed me, like, and he says, you know, and he, kind of funny because, you know, we did the telephone thing and I want you to call me, and I'm like, yeah, okay. You're the guy I'm going to call. All right. And I would see him at a meeting, he'd say, oh, you know, yeah, well, you know. And then, you know, next day, yeah, well, you know, the phone thing. And then he started calling me on the phone. And then he asked me to meet him at a meeting. Parking lot. It's funny. It's not funny, but it's funny. And I didn't know if he wanted to kiss me or kill me. I didn't know this guy. And I ain't about meeting no stranger in a parking lot when it's dark. Wanted to meet me before the meeting. I don't think so. Not yet. Now I was looking forward to either one of those options. But the truth is, he did what sponsors used to. Well, I hope still do, but and he wore me down and taught me, you know, learned how to stay away from alcohol. See, where I came from, the goal was don't drink and make meetings. The more meetings you make, better you feel. Can't stay sober on yesterday's meeting. So I did what I was asked to do. You know, he grabbed me early on and he taught me. Come early, stay late. Sit in the front of the room. No relationships for a year, you stay for the prayer. Whoa, 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 back up. What's the relationship thing? What's the problem? You're married. Yeah, what's the relationship thing? Don't hate. I was just getting sober. And so he says, well, you know. I'm like, yeah, what's the point? I'm here not to drink. So I says, well, is that like all relationships or just here? He said, well, you know. I said, no, you got to be specific on this one. And I learned that I had to make this the most important thing in my life. And I did what I was asked to do. I learned how to make meetings and how to do service. Indeed, I learned how to tell time, because if the meeting started at 7 o'clock, I had to be here at 6. I had to carry through to the rest of my life. You know, where I came from, it didn't start until I got there. Well, don't wait for me. So I had to learn how to be on time. And the truth is that, life wasn't easy for me, but it for sure wasn't as difficult as it was before I got here. You know, it was challenging. And I had this guy telling me and teaching how to do it. Now, I got to tell you, he was 18 years sober a day at a time, made a meeting every day. Now he's sober 43 years, still makes a meeting every day. God bless him. And I love him to death. He's my idol. But I couldn't wrap my head around 18 years. I couldn't wrap my head around 18 months or 18 weeks. But he told me some things early on the interesting thing is, he doesn't necessarily, well, we'll get to that. But, you know, he told me some things early on. He told me, you know, I'm going to tell you this and don't ever forget it. Okay? You know, there's going to come a time when the only thing, I'm here, you sit down, everybody talks about their day, they go to bucket of baskets, they say the prayer, they go home, you get a day, I got it. He said, no, 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 listen to me. It's going to happen. It happens to everybody. I'm like, dude, I got this now. Don't worry about it. I'm good. Now, you got to understand, this is before cell phones. When you would carry a bunch of quarters around, you know, well, sure enough, you know, it was in that early part of my recovery, those first 90 days, you know, situations happened, and he wasn't around to... He said, you know there's a God. I'm like, yeah, I know there's a God. He says, you know it ain't you. I said, yeah, I know it ain't me. I knew. You know, I was one of those people who was just dumb lucky enough to get here with a God. Many people don't. Not a problem. We can help you. But I was one of those people that got here. Like, it was clear to me, you know, in a very short time that I've been kept alive for a reason. When I started to think about the places I had been and some of the situations in my life, you know, I was pumping air due to none of my good grace and well-thought-out plans. You know, I was alive simply as a matter of His grace. And I knew that. I have no allergies acting that way. So, so, you know, I did what I was asked to do. And the drill was, I had to go to a meeting every day. Sunday was a day off. You could go to an open meeting, but you had to go to 2-step meetings a week. And I went. I went and I listened to people talk about the steps. You know, and people that, frankly, were here for a long time and didn't know a lot more about them than I did. And at this time, excuse me, I still had... And I was doing everything that I was asked to do. And I was still crazy inside, you know. A lot of things had gotten better, and a lot of things didn't, you know. And my life was still beyond my control, and I was fighting with it. I don't know if you identify with that. You know, alcoholic like me, maybe you do. You want it to be some other way, and you're willing to make that a car. I was one of them. And and what happened was, after a long period of time, you know, I was struggling. You know, we talk about the basic text. I was the guy on page 52. You know, there was absolutely nothing wrong with my ex-wife. She's a good-looking little girl, a fabulous mother, you know, a half-assed decent wife. as wives go, I mean, I don't know. But I just wish that she was somebody else's. But, you know, I was still waking up every morning and wanting to see her face on a milk carton, you know? Like, and there's nothing wrong with it. I got to tell you something. There's not, you know, it was just like when I was growing up, when I was a kid. Other people would, like, die to live in the house that I was living in. I started running away when I was 13. There was clearly something wrong with me. And I got news for you. Now I'm 30 years old, and not a lot's changed. I'm still insane. Well, I'd been removed from alcohol for some period of time. And I was still experiencing all of this uncomfortability. And I didn't know why. Guys started making meetings where I come from. Sorry. Some guys started making meetings where I come from, and they started talking about things other than their wives, their bosses, their parole officers, the judge, their animals. That's a personal favorite. You and your fucking dog. I'm not going to go there. But they were talking about a God of their understanding. And they were talking about a moral philosophy of life. And they were talking about the freedom that they got as a result. Basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and in my brain I'm hearing like, wait a second. You know? Because this is contrary to everything that I had been taught. It had nothing to do with how many meetings I was making. It was about how close I was to my God. Excuse me? Same God, still had him. I thought I only needed him when I was in a jam. Worked. Still here. What could be better than that? Wow. And I'm listening to these two guys going on for some period of time. Now, the interesting part of that is one of these guys really struggled to get sober. He came in shortly after me and just really, really struggled. And, I'm looking at this guy now and I'm listening to him. Oh, and the difference, Ray Charles could see the difference in this guy. he was clearly in a different place, coming from a different place, living a different kind of life. I wanted some of what he had. But if you're like me, way too full of pride and ego to ask for help. And he was just trying to give it away. But I couldn't go to another man and let him know that he knew something that I didn't know. So I did the next best thing. I got some CDs. So I could backdoor this whole process. I'll be damned if you're going to know something I don't know. And I sat and I listened. And I learned. And I really did. I learned. I got a head full of information. And I really needed help. I was years away from alcohol, and I had 2 felony arrests for aggravated assault and what we loosely call sobriety. Where I got sober in Staten Island, if you didn't drink today, you had a good day. Man, I knew guys that were gambling their paychecks, beating their wives and doing all sorts of abhorrent behavior. And they're sober for years. Sober. I told you, I used that phrase loosely. And I'm saying, I know there's something else. Like, I don't want to be that guy 8, 10, 12 years away from alcohol. But I didn't know what to do. Diary. Buddy started talking about the program recovery. And so I sat and I listened to those CDs, and I got some information. And I learned. And indeed, I felt better. But I wasn't free. I had gotten some more relief. And it wasn't until I humbled myself when I asked another man if he would take me through this work that I actually received the gift. And what I learned was that I didn't take the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous sitting in this room looking at this wall saying, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable. Well, gee, nope. You're kidding me, right? I mean, my first step was when I looked up my ex-wife standing on the stairs, and I said, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I conceded to my innermost self that I had failed. My first step isn't about, I wrecked the car or whatever. The truth of the matter is, I drank and I destroyed wherever I was, no matter what I was doing. Now, there was a time when I had private jets at my disposal, times when I couldn't afford airfare. There was times when I was dating models. There was times when I was dating women that weren't so nice looking. They didn't want to have too much to do. when I was driving really nice European cars, my alcoholism had nothing to do with what was going on the outside. And the truth of the matter is, I was always trying to fix the outside so I could feel better. For me, what ended up happening was I had a God-sized hole in my chest. I don't know if you can identify with that. So some of you are sitting there saying, well, I'm not like him. Well, maybe you are. Because I tried to gamble it away, shop it away, buying automobiles, relationships, sex, you name it. I tried it. I didn't drink today, and I had a bunch of good days. Except all of that other shit was gone. All of that other stuff was going on. Where I come from today, I can tell you that I don't believe that I was successfully sober at that point in my life. But, that's my truth. As long as I didn't drink, I was okay. And I wasn't okay. I was dying inside. I was insane. And so I learned in the first step that it wasn't because I wrecked a car or ruined a household. I ruined several households. It had nothing to do with why I was an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because I got a brain that tells me it'll be okay, different next time. That's what makes me an alcoholic. That's what separates me from that guy. My brain tells me you're going to be different. This body tells me you just need a little more. Just a little. What do we do with that? I know that my history is abundantly confirmed to me that I have destroyed my life. Indeed, the lives of people around me. You can see the wreckage of my past. It's in neon. So left of my own devices, what am I going to do? I'm going to commit the same behavior. The fact of the matter is, if I could fix myself, I'm having a little trouble. Allergies. If I could fix myself, all of those years I was in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have sat in the corner and fixed myself. Do it. There's great guys around me, sober for many years. They couldn't do it. But I'm told that if I go to my God and I say, will you help me? Just maybe. Don't believe? Am I willing to do that? Yeah, because I can't do nothing but destroy. Evident. My history has proven that. Willing to make something else more important than me. Willing to take direction else other than me. Initially a sponsor. And the truth of the matter is, if you're a newcomer, we're just here to entertain you till we bring it to your God. Whatever we have to do. Yeah, we'll listen to those phone calls. Please. Yeah. Oh, no, not again. We'll do it. But the truth of the matter is, you know, that's all about us just sitting there and doing whatever we have to do. Just keep juggling the balls for you. Get you to your God. When I got to my God, I realized that when I was asked to do that 4-7, I was like, you got to understand something else where I came from. I was told, you know, never write anything down that you don't want the world to read. And where I came from, that made perfect sense. But that's not what we do here. Now, you know, so I really have to do this. And I really had to take a good hard look at who I was and what I had done. And actually, you know, a couple of things had happened. Because I had done this all ass backwards, I had realized by that time that I was not the guy that walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I for sure wasn't who I wanted to be. But I was not the guy that had walked through these doors. Y'all had made a change in my life. If I was willing to do these things. Truth about Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're a newcomer and you're sitting there, is anybody here less than a year? Yay. Thank you. If you're a newcomer sitting in this room, we don't often hear enough that you don't ever have to drink again. You don't ever have to drink again. Period. Our birthright as a fellowship is that you can lead an amazing life. Now, I don't know what amazing is to you. I can tell you what amazing is to me. And I've been given that gift. But the truth of the matter is, we have a program that's absolutely bulletproof. It fails no one that avails themselves of it. I don't know any place else on the face of this planet that you can go and get a do-over. Think about it. Whether you're 15, 25, or 55, you sit down with one of these people and crack this book, and I promise you, you can recreate your life. That's our birthright. Not to get through the day and just so I can get to a meeting tomorrow, but exhibit those behaviors and say, I didn't drink today, so I had a good day. Oh. Standing amazing life. That's what's available to us. That was what is offered to us. That was what was offered early on. And that's what's still available to us. If you come to my home group, the Victory Group, on a Sunday night, you will freely hear people offer you a miracle. Not because of, what a guy I am or how swell we are as a group. Because we believe deeply in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not what's on the wall. It's the first 164 pages of our basic text. I have a deep and abiding belief for that book because it's transformed my life. So, now, when I sat down and I shared those things with another alcoholic, I, which is interesting too, I had to reveal everything. And I did, to the best of my ability. And as time went on, my ability got better and there was more stuff to reveal. It's funny because all these years later, I had a sponsor a couple of nights ago, curious about how to make an amends, and we talked about it, and I realized I had done the exact same thing and never cleaned it up. The exact same thing. Not even like similar. You know, it was me and a friend that was in law enforcement, and I jeopardized his family and his career. Like, exact. Right on the phone, Bobby's in Arizona now. Clean that up. You know, I'd like to tell you that that time I went through to work with that gentleman was the last time, but it wasn't. The truth is, we went through 5. I learned in 6 and 7 that left to my own devices, I can do nothing but fail again. I need to be constantly reminded that the things that I rely on are also the things that can kill me, things that will bring me back to alcohol. I learned at 9 that I had to clean up my past, and I had to get right with certain people. And some of those things weren't so easy to do, and indeed, a lot of those people aren't around. And some of them were just anonymous victims. So I've had to set a piece of my life aside to straighten that out on an ongoing basis. Also, you know, my thing is charities and time and stuff like that, because that's my responsibility. That's our responsibility. Of that which has been so freely given to us, whether it be time or money or anything. I learned in 10 that I don't have to fight anybody anymore. In fact, really too much, too tied to what you think of me. I feel like me. And if you don't, I'm okay with that too. I'm going to sleep real well tonight. And that, my life kind of looks like that today. I don't have to participate in your disease. I don't mean you, you. I mean, you know, generally you. Stop the clock, boy. But in 10, I'm done. In 10, I'm done. I've been given the gift. That's it. What am I asked to do? I'm asked to communicate with my God on a regular basis. Wow, that's tough. What a struggle that is. Come on, you kidding me? And it's not a prayer in the morning and a prayer at night. I'm sorry. You know, if you like that with your husband or your wife, and your relationship consisted of 45 seconds or a minute in the morning, it might be a good minute, but the truth of the matter is, it's not going to look like much of a relationship. You know, my relationship with my God is a lot the same way. We just tend to get along a lot better when I communicate with him through the course of the day. And in 12, I'm asked to share this information. Not my really good ideas. I have a bunch of them. Gotten me in a lot of trouble. Still have them sometimes. But this information, another alcoholic. And it talks about, and I was taught that his work. Now, if you don't like the fact that it's called the work, turn to page 19 and get over yourself. It's called the work for a reason, because we're asked to do strenuous work, one alcoholic with another. I don't know about you. Me driving you to a meeting ain't strenuous. Me making a pot of coffee, that ain't strenuous. Sitting down with you for 50, 60 hours, sharing this information with you, malone. That's strenuous. So, that's what's asked of me. That's not too hard a deal. So what do I get for that? Get a gift of a life that's beyond anything that I could have ever conceived. Truth of the matter is, when I came home, I got sober when our little girl was a little bit over 2 years old. And that second year, mother kept her away. Oh, here's one. So, the ex-wife that I used to look for in the milk cups, I now cook Thanksgiving dinner for her and her mother every year. And they're over my house, and I just got the call that I'm going over her house for Easter this year. And my God and my program had a way of fixing. Now, let me share with you. There was a time when we were in the active divorce process that didn't look like too much of a possibility. But we're taught to not bow aside in the street. We're taught to treat everyone with love and tolerance. When I do my contemplation at night, that's the one I usually trip on. You know, did I treat the rest of the world with love and tolerance? I'm in the construction industry. I own a paving company. Often, not so touchy-feely during it. But the truth of the matter is, I have to be true to my God, and when I'm not, and I gotta clean it up, regardless of how distasteful I might find that individual, I got it though. So, you know, let me share with you that I don't know what you're doing. I don't think there's any wrong way to stay sober. If what you're doing is working for you, God bless you, keep doing it. I'll tell you, you know, I've worked with alcoholics that were 22, 25, 30 years old. Not quite 30, of course. You're irritable, restless, and discontented. We have a way that works. You know, I no longer have to seek relief in the Alcoholics Anonymous. Like that little girl that I was telling you about whose life that I left, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she started making meetings with me, and there was like this whole thing that used to happen when she was a kid. Wednesday night was day night. All through her high school, through college, you know, we would talk twice a day. Becky to Manhattan, and she's getting married. Best that I could do was the absolute best that I could do. You know, I don't know. You know, I tell you that I just know what worked for me, and I know what brought me to peace and what's given me the gift of a life that's beyond anything that I could have conceived. And I'd like to welcome you to that way of life. There's people here that will freely share it with you. And I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity.